I self-manage all of my properties, and every one of my tenants has my cell phone number. I've never used a property management company because if there's a problem, I want the opportunity to make a positive impression.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I am so excited to introduce our amazing guest for the day, Ash Patel. Ash, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Sujatha, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. I first saw Ash speak at BE conference. That's the best ever conference. And just was so impressed by everything that he's doing in the real estate space. So really excited to have him on the show. Ash has been a full-time CRE investor for 10 plus years, and he buys anything he can make money on, from mixed use, medical, industrial, office, or retail. So excited to get into your story, Ash. Please give us a bit of an idea of how you got into the real estate space and why.
Yeah, so I had my typical path laid out for me. I was an IT major in college and went down the IT path for about 15 years. Always had a side hustle throughout those years. And it wasn't until I was 30-something that I found real estate. And I never knew much about it, but I always assumed that real estate was a great way to write off taxes. Never knew about depreciation or any of that stuff, but I always heard, hey, you know, real estate will give you a great tax break. So I bought my first building, and it was a mixed-use building. So there was residential over commercial, store, college town apartments above it. And I'll never forget, I was out there one weekend. I think I was unclogging a toilet or a sink for a tenant. And I look outside, and on the roof of the commercial building, they were replacing their entire HVAC system. So I don't know what's going on. I'm kind of panicking, like, who's paying for this? And I go down to the store and I said, hey, what's going on? They're like, yeah, our HVAC went out, so we're replacing the entire system. And I'm like, on your dime? Like, yeah. I'm like, oh my God, this is incredible. And as I'm leaving, they asked me, hey, do you mind if I remodel the bathroom as well? And I'm like, absolutely not. Like, have at it. So I went home, and it was like a pivotal moment where I realized residential tenants will put wear and tear on your property. Commercial tenants actually improve it. So from that moment on, I invested in commercial real estate.
That is such an eye-opening perspective, and definitely one that, you know, is not as prominent in, I feel like, this space. You know, commercial is generally considered like riskier than residential, for example, and, you know, by banks and also in the space. And I'd love to hear your take on that, because I mean, it's a great light bulb moment. How do you reckon with like potential greater risks?
Yeah, that's a great question, because you're absolutely right. But back in, you know, 2010 through now, the risk was mitigated by real estate prices just continuing to improve. So I would buy vacant buildings and, you know, within months, be able to rent them out, right? Not as easy to do today as it was 5, 6, 7 years ago. So you have to mitigate the risk, you know, and I've gotten burned by that. I bought a number of buildings in a river town in Ohio, and me and a couple guys went in there at auction and literally bought half the town. And we had these great plans on bringing kayak rentals and bike rentals and ice cream shops. And we were going to turn this town around, and that didn't work. You know, our egos were too big. We thought anything we touched turned to gold at the time, and we failed. Uh-huh. You know, it did not work. So
there's not enough people coming through.
You know, it was a combination of the town being ravaged by job losses, drugs. Their city council, mayor didn't get along. Just the perfect storm of nonsense, right? Like, this town back in the day was incredible. It was a destination. And just over the years, it had gone downhill. And again, we thought we could turn it around because we've had so much success with other types of properties similar to that, but it didn't work. And that was a great lesson in mitigating risk. So all I could say with risk is, the more research you do, the more deals you do, the better you are at identifying it and being able to mitigate it, right?
For sure. That's definitely, there's no silver bullet, right? So what was the lesson learned with that particular property?
I think I bought a half a dozen buildings in that town. The lesson was, not everything I touch turns to gold. Be humble, and you're going to have losses, right? I mean, you're not going to win them all. And, you know, things like jobs going away from that area are actually important. The economic indicators of a particular area are very important. Traffic counts, towns that are seasonal, you have to take that into account. But there were just too many factors. And again, I needed to learn that because everything I bought previous to that was a home run. So I'm glad. And, you know, the losses weren't significant, but nonetheless, it was significant in terms of lessons learned.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'd love to hear more about, you know, some of the other, because I'm curious, I'm sure the listeners are curious, what are the types of deals that you had done before that were home runs and like after?
Yeah, prior to that, I've done standalone retail, triple net retail, strip malls, medical development, office buildings, plenty of retail, and mixed use and residential. After that, I went on to do industrial, warehouses, probably a couple other different asset groups, but anything commercial that I think I can make money on, I'll invest in.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And, you know, I know there's industrial is a little bit newer to kind of the space. I mean, it's been around for a long time, obviously. Is that something you're focusing on right now?
So I focus on properties that are either under the radar or properties that nobody else wants. So a couple of examples of each. Industrial property we picked up recently, it was advertised by an auction house, a mom and pop auction house. They had like 8 people at the auction, right? So it wasn't advertised very well. Had they put it on the MLS and had they done a better job advertising it, there should have been hundreds of people there bidding on this. So because of that, we were able to pick this up, you know, for 30 cents on the dollar of what it should have gone for. I've also picked up triple net properties that were advertised on the residential section of an MLS versus commercial, right? So when residential realtors list a commercial property, often as a favor to a friend, they misprice it, they misadvertise it, and I often find deals that way.
Interesting. Okay. So yeah, that's very creative and a great way to pick up properties at great prices. Did you develop that method over time, or did you start out by just calling brokers and looking at what was being offered by brokers?
You know, I've done it all. I've called brokers and I've gotten on their list. The problem with that is if you're not well known in the beginning, they will give you a chance. If you don't jump on the one property that they tell you is a great deal, they move on, right?
Yeah.
It's not until you're kind of established that they bring you deals. But even then, deals that brokers have often don't meet the return criteria for me.
Right.
My minimum is 30% cash on cash, but often ends up being much higher.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So brokers won't allow a deal like that to come through. They'll price it higher at maybe, you know, 10, 15% cash on cash. So brokers are not a good source for my deals.
For sure. I mean, that's pretty awesome for you to be able to have criteria with such basically high returns. Is it hard to come by deals? Or I know you're an expert at it.
Yeah, it's very hard. You know, but it, in 2011, 12, it wasn't hard, right? Like you could literally open up any kind of commercial real estate search engine and find whatever you're looking for. But now there's so much money in the sidelines. People are dying for deal flow. So yes, it's very, very difficult. So you just have to be more creative. A good example is an old college friend of mine came to me literally 3 months ago. And he's like, hey, Ash, I want to get into commercial real estate. Can I take you out to lunch and learn a little bit? Sure. So we go out and I kind of give him a high level overview of how to find deals while he goes on, looks at LoopNet and, you know, the typical sources, and he finds some triple net fast food places near his house. And I asked him why, like, it's triple net. Why do you care if it's in your backyard? You know, this way I can drive by it on weekends and see how it's doing. Well, no, that's not important, because if it's triple net, you have no landlord responsibilities. It could be in Anchorage, Alaska, and it doesn't matter. And look at these returns and look at this footprint. Mm-hmm. So we kind of just dove into different deals that he brought to me. And in week two, he gets on Craigslist and he does a search for "my parents died." And he literally, in 50 different cities, people that were selling anything from an estate perspective, "my parents passed away, you know, need to sell this business, this house, these antiques." He didn't focus just on real estate. He wanted to find anybody that misplaced their ad. If it's real estate, that's in antiques or cars, he wanted to find it. Mm-hmm. And then he also did a search in probably a dozen different states of how do I sell my business? And the business brokers that were paying for advertisement on Google, he would call them and say, "Hey, listen, I'm looking to buy real estate. If a business happens to come along with it, I'm okay with that." So this guy put in 12-hour days, and after 50 hours of searching, found a deal in Black Hills, South Dakota. And it's a huge home run, almost 100% cash on cash return. Right. So it's not easy. You just have to be creative, put the time in, and just search. And, you know, Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace, people that are looking to invest in commercial real estate often don't use those sources.
Yeah, for sure. That's very interesting and great insights for actually getting, you know, excellent deals. And so just to, so I'm a little clear about the cash on cash returns, when you look at like 100% cash on cash return for this example deal, is that, would that fluctuate? That, I mean, because retail often does fluctuate, right?
Yeah. So this was a unique deal. And again, business brokers are a great source for buying real estate. They're often, they have blinders on. They only look at the valuation of businesses and often misprice the value of real estate. So a good example is I bought a restaurant bar building several years ago, and it was advertised on bizbysell.com, and it was advertised as a restaurant for sale. Well, the restaurant had been closed for 2 years, right? It was a vacant building. And the guy was trying to sell a closed restaurant, which had no value. So we convinced him that, "Hey, man, this is a real estate deal, not a business deal." Ended up buying the building. So business brokers, had he placed this building on the MLS, it would have sold very quickly, right? And when I bought it, everyone was like, "Hey, we were waiting for this building to come up for sale. How'd you find it?" Well, look where no one else is looking. Right. Yeah. Real estate people are not looking at business brokers for real estate. So back to your question, the cash on cash return. This was a business and a building being sold. You had to buy them both. So we got the numbers on the business. There's a manager who's going to stay on, who's been running the business for a dozen years. So it's kind of a turnkey business. And, you know, it's not a strictly a real estate deal. It's both. So he's now a business owner and a real estate owner.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that's all very fascinating. And so let's go back to this example of the restaurant. So did you end up purchasing that building, right?
I did.
Okay. And then what does it look like? Because, you know, obviously it's a commercial building. Sounds, was it residential on top?
No, it's okay. a 200-year-old building. Beautiful. It's in a walking suburb, like a suburban downtown. Very walkable, two stories. There's a salon that occupies 30% of it. And the rest is just a huge bar restaurant space.
So how did you, what did you do? Like when you bought that building, were you already like, okay, I know what I think could go here. And what are the steps to leasing it up?
So I was assuming I was buying the building at a good price. And while it was under due diligence, I found an operator who wanted to lease the building. So literally by the day that I closed, I had a signed lease in place for an operator on a 10-year lease.
Wow.
So there was, you know, I had to give some...
And was it an operator of a bar? Was that...
You know, it was, they had a coffee shop bookstore and they wanted to expand. So now they did coffee shop, bookstore, bar, restaurant.
Okay. Very fascinating. And you know, since a lot of us don't play in this space, I'm curious how it was that you found those, like, what did you do to look for operators?
So you pound the pavement, right? Mm-hmm. You network, Craigslist, Facebook, let everybody know this is what you're looking for. This is a location you're at. Flyers, knocking on business people's doors, just literally pounding the pavement, offering large incentives to people, you know, $5,000, $10,000 if you could find me a tenant for this space. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just all hands on deck, right?
Yeah.
Every available resource, you go out there and just pound the pavement.
Uh-huh. Okay. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I love the grit and the perseverance and just the creativity that you're employing in this to make this space work. It's pretty incredible.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's definitely one of a kind, I would say. So how did that go during, you know, COVID? Because obviously retail was kind of hit hard. Were you still purchasing? How did that go?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Surprisingly, yes. But from a management perspective, I self-manage all of my properties, and every one of my tenants has my cell phone number. I've never used a property management company because if there's a problem, I want the opportunity to make a positive impression. So during COVID, in terms of management, I had one salon who asked for 2 months, no rent, not a problem because they put a lot of money into their space. And then I had a photographer who asked for a 30-day extension on paying rent, no problem. And all the other tenants paid. But in terms of finding deals, yeah, it was the same thing. These couple deals, a local residential realtor brought them to me. And this is interesting. This was a residential realtor who was killing it. And I said, hey, listen, why don't you look at commercial? Well, I don't know anything about it. Well, okay, I'll help you, but you have all these great systems in place. Why not apply that to commercial buildings where instead of making commission on a $100,000 house, you're making commission on a $1 million building? Sounds interesting, you know, sure. So over time, she would send me some deals and ask me how you would price a gas station, a retail strip mall, whatever. Well, really what was happening is I was helping her, but I was also getting the first look at these properties before they hit the market. So she was a great source for deal flow, right? And mentoring, so I mentored her. I've mentored a number of other people, and I did it for no money, didn't care about, you know, I don't know if you could tell, but I'm passionate about real estate, right? Like I overdo it. I'll talk to anybody about real estate. And so part of that mentoring is when these individuals found deals,
absolutely,
they would ask me if I would partner with them. It was never my intention, but obviously if they found a deal, it's a great deal, great returns. Yeah, let's partner and let's do the next one. So that's how you find deals, right? Like a lot of it is the byproduct of mentoring others, and it magically leads to deal flow.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
And sorry, one more thing. A lot of wholesalers out there, I'm trying to convince them to do the same thing, right? So these wholesalers have amazing systems in place where they call the homeowner every third Friday of the month and just say, hey, following up, are you looking to sell? Well, I've never gotten a postcard, a text, a call for any of my commercial buildings. So why isn't anybody wholesaling commercial real estate, mm-hmm. right? Like saying, hey, I'll make you a cash offer for your building, close quickly. Mm-hmm. Why not? So some of these wholesalers are now starting to go into commercial. I'm helping them do that. And it's great because it's the same thing. They're making commission, so to speak, on much higher priced real estate, and it's more lucrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really great point. And just another opportunity. I love how you're always looking for that opportunity to not just do what everyone else is doing, but to kind of find more value
and take the creative approach. So that's so interesting. There are so many wholesalers out there, and if there's a lot of opportunity on the table, right? So I love it.
Yeah. So here's a question for you. What's keeping you from investing in commercial real estate? And have you ever thought about it actively?
I would say that I am in hospitality. So that's kind of like a little bit of both real estate and commercial. And, you know, obviously with COVID, like, I mean, at least I was able to pivot my hospitality units to extended stay. It was a bit like unsettling, I would say. And so I think I'm nervous about commercial real estate. Like, it sounds like, you know, you create these relationships with your tenants and they trust you. Do you think that's one reason why we were able to weather COVID with like almost with very little rent issues?
I believe that's a big part of it. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's fun, right? Like, yeah. I love going on site to different properties and just like seeing how people are doing and watching their businesses thrive.
Yeah.
Like, that's a fun day for me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's amazing. And I love that too. I think the thing that I have, the impression that I have of commercial real estate, it's less recession resistant than say, you know, self-storage or multifamily or senior living or mobile home parks, et cetera.
You're 100% right. But if you dive into that a little deeper, Class A commercial is definitely not recession resistant, right?
Sure.
So downtown office buildings, larger retail shopping malls, anything anchored by Class A national tenants is tough. But when you go into a suburban downtown and a strip mall that has a hair salon, an insurance agent, a deli, things like that are pretty recession resistant because they're neighborhood services. And especially in the aftermath of COVID, people aren't driving downtown to go to the bars and restaurants. They're going now to their suburban watering hole or lunch spot, right? So the suburban real estate is popping. Mm-hmm. And there's great deals to be found, and it's not hard to get tenants in walkable communities, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's very attractive, especially from a return perspective. Like, it's a great opportunity and something that I should definitely explore more.
If you find a deal, we'll do another podcast and we'll do a deep dive into looking into the numbers of the deal and see if it's a good deal or not.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I would love to do that. Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah, cool. So Ash, what else do you attribute your, I mean, I know you've been speaking about this, but is there anything else that you would attribute your success to over the years?
It's mostly looking for deals, right? The number of hours I spent per deal that I actually close on is enormous. I mean, that's mm-hmm. where most of my time is spent on. Mm-hmm. So it's just looking for unicorns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. I mean, they're out there. It just takes a lot of searching to find them.
Is it like sometimes there's a lot and then for months there's none, or how does that work for you typically?
Yeah. So it might be like a half a dozen deals per year. But you can go 6-7 months without finding a deal. And then all of a sudden there's two or three.
Yes, totally. It is a little bit like could be potentially feast or famine. And are you like, how do you stay focused during those periods of 6 or 7 months? Are you just like, are you just sitting at your computer, like brainstorming different ways to, you know, look for deals? Like, how do you maintain that focus?
Yeah. I start looking in other areas to kind of keep my squirrel syndrome intact. But so I look at like Albuquerque or Knoxville, Tennessee, right? Like dive into a completely different town and learn about it. Like learn about the yeah. demographics, get onto their Facebook page and talk to some locals or read what people are posting about their town and just kind of deep dive into different cities. Mm-hmm. Just try to keep things exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's interesting. So you mentioned squirrel syndrome. I feel like, how would you describe your squirrel syndrome or what it is?
Oh, so it's horrible. I literally have a home office that, you know, it's dedicated space, but it's so easy to get distracted because I'm not accountable to anybody except for me.
Yeah.
Right. So it's very difficult to stay focused.
Yeah.
I've tried, you know, I've done the coaching thing. I've read every book you can imagine on staying focused and creating tasks, but it just comes down to discipline. How bad do you want it? Right. Like,
yeah. Well, I think there's a balance too, when you're trying new activities and like, you know, when you're being creative and thinking like, well, what's a different angle that I can approach this? It's a very different space than like being productive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. And Trevor McGregor, I used him as a coach And, you know, one of the things that I've kept putting off is playing guitar. And he's like, okay, you have to do it because it gets your creativity going. And I assumed it was a waste of time, right? Like picking up a guitar and practicing. But in reality, it gets your creative juices flowing. And it probably helps in terms of finding deals or thinking a little bit differently about deals.
Yeah, that's awesome. So one way that you're, it sounds like, if I'm understanding correctly, that you're just doing a deep dive into a city and really trying to focus your efforts in that way.
Yeah. And believe it or not, the mentoring thing is so much fun for me.
Yeah.
So I love evaluating deals, right? Searching, like I'll look through 200 different listings a day, but it's when you find one that you want to deep dive in, pick up the phone, do a Google Street View, kind of check the neighborhood out. Like that's the fun part, chasing the deals. Right. So like identifying a potential deal is part of the job. But then once you find a potential deal, like doing a deep dive, figuring out who the tenants are, why it's for sale, who's the current owner, why do they buy it? Why are they selling it? What their story is. So that's the fun part, right? The actual chase of the deal.
For sure. And it's so great that you love that. I mean, it makes so much sense that you're basically playing to your strengths by just focusing on doing what you really love to do. So yeah, not everybody wants to chase deals, right?
Yeah, but yeah, then you shouldn't be in the space.
Well, I mean, there's different...
invest passively.
Yeah, for sure. Right? Yeah. So then here's another question for you. How are you, you know, if you keep adding properties to your portfolio and you're the point of contact, does that ever get to be too much in terms of like, I mean, is it growing? Do you notice like, because I feel like for me, I'm like, okay, well, I could keep growing my operations portfolio, but like then eventually I'm going to get too much, you know, I'll have too much time that I'm devoting to operations and not enough time that I want to be devoting to like finding new deals, et cetera.
Yeah. And that's a great question. And I was my worst enemy and caused my own problems. So I've got an office building that's maybe 20 minutes from my house. And for whatever reason, like I would go do the landscaping there. No idea why, right? Like it was just a dumb thing to do. But you know, you put systems in place, right? So I've got a tenant there who does all the common area cleaning. And she asked me if she can continue to clean the outside as well, or take on the outside and basically do all of the building maintenance. And I'm like, yeah, like, I don't know why I'm doing it. So just putting systems in place and really using your tenants as your boots on the ground, right? So every location that you have, there's going to be one tenant who is best qualified to be your eyes and ears and, you know, spray weeds or whatever it is, little things that need to be done. So really just building a good relationship with tenants gets it done. And like literally I've had tenants call me and say, hey, we found somebody that can paint the outside of this building really inexpensively. Do you mind if we do it? No, like I'll pay for it, but thank you. Right.
Yeah.
So really just using tenants as your boots on the ground.
For sure. And I mean, I think it makes so much more sense to be able to do that with commercial tenants because they're kind of have that business mindset, right? Of like trying to do things efficiently and do what's necessary and what's really going to have an impact.
Yeah. And they care about the aesthetics of your building.
Yeah.
Whereas a residential tenant, you're never going to find out that there's clogged gutters, right? They don't care.
Yeah.
So yeah.
For sure.
So do you invest passively as well?
I do. Yeah, I invest passively. Okay. And then I also help other people invest passively. And so my main role is helping find deals that I believe to be a worthy place for people's money. And so I'm looking at deals a lot too.
So tell me more. People that don't know how to grow money or don't know how to grow money at the rate that they want will come to you.
Yes. So basically, you know, you can be an active investor, like what you're doing. You're incredibly active. You're on the hunt. You're, you know, making everything happen actually. And, but like someone like you may run out of capital or need some more capital to do more deals. Like that might be the bottleneck in your business. And so you're great at operating, for example. And then what I would do is I would say, okay, well, I currently want to focus on evaluating deals that people like you are doing. And then I'm going to build relationships and, you know, help people understand how they can grow their money because maybe they're not doing that. Maybe they've never learned how to do that. And maybe they have only invested in stocks and bonds or nothing outside of their 401k, for example. And so I'm basically focusing on the education piece and kind of lighting the world on fire, getting people excited about investing in real estate and helping them understand how it can work for them in a passive way. And then I'll create an SPV, a special purpose vehicle. that's focused on usually a particular deal or set of deals, and then that are pre-identified. And then they'll invest into that fund. Mm-hmm. And then we will, as a group, fund a deal. And oftentimes we can negotiate preferential terms because we're writing like larger checks. So we'll be able to, and that's one way that I would get compensated, is by basically negotiating better terms. Hey, everybody. Well, we lost Ash. Unfortunately, even though he's an IT professional, just the internet was not working today. But in any case, he provided a ton of value and we're so grateful we had him on the show. We already have plans to do another show with him where we're going to review deals live and also hunt for deals live, which I'm incredibly excited about. So if you want to reach Ash, you can find him on LinkedIn, Ash Patel. That's A-S-H. And the last name, P-A-T-E-L. Thank you so much, Ash, for coming on the show. And everybody, we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.